Bloomberg Surveillance with Ken Pruitt and Tom Keene. If you're listening via our new Radio Plus iPhone app, did you know that our hosts sometimes send charts they're talking about directly to the Radio Plus app? If you don't have the Radio Plus iPhone app yet, you'll want to download it. It's free via the iTunes App Store.
Ray Stone joins us right now. Ray, good morning.
Good morning, Tom.
Ray, you look at the spending numbers in a little south, the revision a little south. How will that change our perspective on consumption in the United States?
Well, on two fronts. One, this is a snapshot of what we saw in June in the prior couple of months. But it does appear, given that we had a decline in the PCE when adjusted for inflation of 0.1%, it shows that we ended the quarter below the quarterly average, which means that we're not going to get much kick as we move into the third quarter.
Yeah.
So it does start to paint a picture that third quarter spending and ultimately third quarter GDP might be lackluster once again.
One of the great features of Stone and McCarthy is the minutiae, your ability to go into data and dig and dig and dig. When you go through that exercise now on the U.S. economy, what is striking?
Well, we have slowed down, and certainly this is a disappointment, and it's disappointing to the Fed as well. The big question, I think, in everyone's mind, why aren't we creating more jobs? And one of the things that I have been focusing on in recent months is the behavior of what the BLS calls the BED data, B-E-D. It stands for Business Employment Dynamics Data. And what these data show is the employment changes by type of firm, whether it's a new firm, an expanding firm, a contracting firm, or a firm that's dying. And in these data, we can see where there's job growth and where there's job destruction. And historically, the growth in payrolls has largely been because of births of new firms. And we're not getting many births these days. So I think in policies should be perhaps directed at not raising the overall aggregate demand and hope that with a rising tides raises all boats, but more specifically focused on making sure credit is available to entrepreneurs to start companies.
Well, Ray, are consumers still deleveraging? Is that process continuing?
Yeah, I think they are. And, yeah, you know, we're beginning to see some better gains in consumer credit and things of that nature. And the deleveraging in general has been a phenomenon for the past several years that has hurt economic activity. That said, I think, you know, it comes back to credit availability. And we talk about low interest rates and what the Fed can do to get interest rates still lower. It's more complicated than just the general level of interest rates. It's making sure that people who are credit worthy, they don't even have to be the top credit, but people who are down the curve a little bit have credit available to them.
Ray, I'm looking at a data check here. Folks, we got to keep you up to speed on these data checks. And it is a very nuanced screen. And that the bond market is screaming risk off. We've now gone below a 147 to four digits, 1.4696 on the 10-year. We have moved 9 basis points in the last couple days. All of this through the first word in surveillance this morning with spreads wider. The currency market hasn't moved yet, but that bears close watching. The German 10-year, a much lower yield. Ray, it's almost schizophrenic. Certain categories showing risk off and others lethargic. With all this news flow this week, how do you interpret that economically?
Well, I'm not sure it's good news. I mean, to the extent that, you know, risk-free rates go down rates with risk go up, it means that, you know, there's a flight to quality, and people, you know, investors are buying treasuries, buying bonds, whatever. But we really have to think about how can credit be moved towards where we need to get credit. In other words, if when I worked for a bank, we used to have a joke, and we said, when you need a loan, you are a loan.
Yeah,
and we have to get money directed back to those level, those agents in the economy that are, you know, should be able to borrow, but whose credit, you know, is just impaired.
Neil Dutta, publishing moments ago at Renaissance Macro, and Ray, you live these numbers, folks. We mentioned the headline data the pros like Dr. Stone really dig beneath it. And when you dig, Ray, you see a savings rate, I would say climbing briskly is how I'd put it, out of a 3-level to 4%, mm-hmm. and now 4.4%. Can we save too much?
Well, if we're saving, we're not spending. And right now, we want the people to be spending. We want the consumption to go up. We hope that that, you know, influences overall aggregate demand and drives the job machine a little bit. So a rise in the savings rate is not a something that's actually good for us right now.
Well, what are people waiting for, Ray?
Well,
is it the job market?
I think the job market is a key factor here, and ultimately, you know, much of our demise of our economy can be traced back to housing. And housing, while is doing better than it had, it's this recovery so far has been very slight and if very modest. So until we get housing back on its feet, or at least they're moving in the right direction with some gusto, it's going to be hard to really drive, I think, consumer confidence and jobs and spending and so forth. But I think we're working our way there. It's just a slow and painful process.
How much longer? Do you have any thoughts on that?
Gosh,
I
wish I knew. I think, you know, folks at the Fed and other places are thinking about the same thing. And certainly this has been too slow an expansion or recovery to call victory at this point in time. And Fed's wondering today and tomorrow what they should do, if anything. And these are difficult decisions. I think everyone mm-hmm. would be happy if things were happening a little faster than they are.
I just sent out, folks, on Bloomberg Radio Plus. See it out at iTunes, the App Store. It's free on your iPhone. And yes, folks, Android, I am told, days away. I will be the first to tell you of that. A chart, sent out a chart on inflation-adjusted consumer spending. It's the month-over-month chart, Ray. I usually don't send that out, but it really shows a sensitive metric, and that the direction has been a lousy 2 months. And 3 of the last 5 months have been sportingly difficult. That really gets us back. It doesn't get us back to the gloom of 08, but spending is rolling over when you look at inflation adjusted.
It really is. And in June, PCE adjusted for inflation was down 0.1%. It's below the second quarter average. So June is below the second quarter average. And even if we have small gains or reasonable gains over the next 3 months, we get a PCE number of 1%, maybe 1.5% if we're lucky. And that's where we were in the second quarter. So it tells us that third quarter GDP is not likely to be materially different than it was in the second quarter. And that's not acceptable. We're growing too slowly.
So what are you looking for on Friday morning with the jobs report? Are you in the 8.2% camp? That's the
Well, yeah, I am. To be honest, I looked at the Bloomberg survey, and my estimates are almost identical to the median estimates. I'm looking for 100,000 in payrolls and an 8.2% unemployment rate. What I find interesting in the Bloomberg survey is that the forecasts are clustered right around 100. Most of the forecasts are, say, between 75,000 and 125,000, a range of only 50. What's odd about the July numbers is there's a big wild card, and that wild card has to do with teacher employment. And that can be a swing of 100,000 or so, and it's hard to predict. So while everyone's clustered around this 100,000 number, if we see it print at 150 or 200,000, or we see it at flat, the first thing I'm going to do is look at teacher employment to see if there's any quirk there.
I'm fascinated. Why is that? I mean, there's pages of data, and the economic firm that looks at each and every nuance says teachers matter. Why?
Well, each July, those teachers who are paid on a 10-month basis, they fall off payrolls, and then they come back in September. And this happens every July, but what we have seen over recent years is a purging of teachers. And we have seen budget cutbacks on the local government level, and it's difficult to discern whether these historical patterns will work out the same way they did in prior years. Teacher employment falls over 1 million jobs each July. So let's suppose we're off by 10% of the change. That's 100,000 jobs. So it gives us a giant wild card, which can make this payroll number either weaker or stronger. I don't know which direction. I'm guessing it's not a big deal, and so is everyone else, apparently. But if you look at the forecast errors for July employment, The big errors tend to be traceable to times when teacher employment on a seasonally adjusted basis goes up a lot or down a lot.
That's why we love to have Ray Stone on. It's amazing detail. Yeah. Absolutely amazing. What else? I look at median duration, the structural employment. Here's another chart going out, folks. This is full-time employment in America. It's cyclical, up in, you know, full-time employment rolls over in the 90s off the recession. And then it recovers 02, 03, and then it rolls over again. And boy, is it. The unemployment rate is ugly. It was 11% on full-time, and now it's only 8.70%. Where are full-time jobs?
Well, I think they're in the traditional industries. I think you're seeing a lot more part-time employment. Some of this, I think, is driven by demographics. With an aging population, you have people who are my age who are thinking about semi-retirement, so they take part-time jobs. You also have a bubble at the front end of the with the lower age cohorts, you know, the 16-year-old to 24-year-old people, and a lot of these folks are students, and part-time employment is very popular with them, too.
But it's not like the previous two cycles, is
no,
it?
No, it's not. I mean, part of it is simply the economy is weak, and part of it is the demographic makeup.
I mean, I went back, folks. Let me send this. This is an even better. Ray, I'm all charts today. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. Great story. So
yeah, well, there we are back to 1970. And, Ken, it's right now, full-time unemployment rate is back to where it was at the worst of the 74-75 recession.
Oh.
Wow.
Yeah.
That says a lot.
Yeah. The interesting thing when you go back to the 70s is you had a phenomena where women were entering the labor force, particularly the full-time labor force, you know, looking for full-time jobs in mass at that point in time. And that was the women as a portion of the labor force back then was, you know, a number like 30 or 35%. Now it's about 50%. So women and men are equally represented in the labor force. But during that period of time, you had this influx of women into the labor force. The job machine was just not that strong, and that's part of the reason we had such a high unemployment rate back then.
And of course, one of the other differences is the oldest baby boomers back then were in their 20s.
Right.
And now they're 65, 66. And that really, really makes a difference between now and
the,
at least if you want to go back to 81, 82, you know, that really makes a difference.
It absolutely does. And we have to understand the demographic makeup back then versus now and why there were differences. Simply looking at the unemployment rate in itself doesn't tell that story. For example, a 10% unemployment rate now might be more painful than a 10% unemployment rate was in 1982.
The zeitgeist is the Fed is going to extend out to late 2015. It begs the question, what's going to be the public policy to make the full-time unemployment rate chart look a little better? Do you have a policy?
Well, what I found interesting in the minutes of the June meeting, and again, I think in testimony before Congress, it's clear that the Fed is looking for new tools. You know, Ben Bernanke, when asked about the tools of the Fed, you know, talked about asset purchases, the possibility of changing the guidance, the possibility of lowering the interest rate on reserves, and he also said something that he left out a year ago, and that was the discount window options. And it seems to me they're looking for creative ways, maybe not doing just more of the same, but something different. And I'm one that would argue that maybe taking a closer look at what the Fed can do through the discount window to provide credit that can ultimately be channeled to households and businesses that maybe are not the top credits, but a notch or two down, I think that would go a long way to fostering growth.
Ray Stone, thank you so much. Stone and McCarthy,
thanks,
just brilliant there on the labor economy.
Listen to Bloomberg Surveillance weekday mornings at 7 Eastern on Bloomberg 1130 in New York or on Sirius and XM Satellite Radio Channel 113. Copyright 2012.